This is The Guardian.
Just a warning before we start. This episode contains racial slurs that might be distressing to some, especially for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners. Please listen with care. I'm Noor Haidar, coming to you from Gadigal land, and this is the full story.
It's a Friday morning in Alice Springs, the last morning of Zakharov's evidence before the inquest into Kumanjai Walker's death. I'm standing on a patch of grass just on the other side of the road to the Alice Springs local court.
It's been almost 5 years since Walpuri teenager Kumanjai Walker was shot dead by a police officer in the remote Alice Springs community of Yundamu during a violent arrest. In 2022, police officer Zachary Rolfe was found not guilty of murder and other related charges. Now, a coronial inquest is examining the events surrounding Kumanjai Walker's death, including whether systemic racism in the police force was a factor.
It's on this grass that every day some shade tents are erected and some mats put on the ground, and the Walpuri or Yapa people establish a bit of a camp where they'll sit and they'll listen to a live stream of the hearing, and lawyers that are representing the community and also Kumanjai Walker's families will come out and explain to them at different times what has actually been going on inside the building opposite.
There has been hundreds of hours of testimony over many months from dozens of witnesses.
It was expected it was going to be the week where we finished hearing from the last witness, Zachary Rolfe, but we didn't quite get there. And it looks like Rolfe will be coming back to give evidence in May.
And for Walker's family, it's been a long journey.
We obviously came here, and I think for all of us, you've just got to sort of build up your emotional tolerance and, you know, figure out when you sort of can be emotional, when you've got to be strong. And we were all hoping that we didn't have to keep building it. So I think we're just extremely exhausted, but sort of hoping to go away and recharge and then be back in May.
Today, courts and justice reporter Nino Bucci on what Zachary Rolfe revealed to the inquest about the culture of the Northern Territory Police. It's Monday, the 11th of March.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Nino, the former NT police officer Zachary Rolfe fronted the coronial inquest. Can you tell us about the mood both inside and outside the Alice Springs courthouse?
To start with, there was almost a sense of relief that it was finally happening, because there'd been a long delay to kind of get Zach Rolfe, the final witness in this inquest, to front up for a week and tell his side of this story, and I guess provide some insights into what happened leading up to the shooting, but also in the NT police force. Once he kind of started giving that evidence, certainly in the courtroom itself, it was quite tense, and there was a lot of objections from his lawyers and quite a lot of to and fro in terms of legal kind of argument. And outside the courtroom, there's, you know, a small sort of park where for the majority of the inquest, people from Yendamu, the Walpuri community, had been sort of setting up and they'd sit out there and people would explain the kind of day's proceedings to them. Their lawyers would come out and have a chat to them. But on that Monday, the first day that Rolf was giving evidence, he sort of had to cross over the road from the courthouse and get into a taxi right near where the Walpuri people had been gathering, and there was quite, I guess, heightened tensions. And he was threatened and abused, and somebody even took a thong off their foot and tried to smack him with it. So there was quite a lot of aggression, I guess, in the air, perhaps understandably given the themes that were being dealt with inside the court. But certainly by the end of the week, it had kind of found a level and it had settled down as much as possible when we're dealing with things as confronting as what was going on in the courtroom.
Nino, it has taken us quite some time to get to this point. I was hoping you might be able to remind us of what's happened so far in this case.
So if we go all the way back to November 2019, Rolf and other NT police officers were trying to arrest Kumanjai Walker in the remote community of Yendamu. Walker stabbed Rolf with scissors and Rolf then shot him 3 times. Rolf was found not guilty in March 2022 of murder and other alternate charges relating to the death, but the inquest into Walker's death is currently ongoing. It was hoped that this inquest was going to be finished by the end of 2022. It was set down for 3 months. It started in September 2022, and the idea was that it would finish hearing all its evidence by the end of that year. We're obviously in early 2024 now, and it's still going. It's been a very drawn-out process. Much of that has been because of legal challenges filed by Rolf and his legal team to, you know, things like the evidence that can be heard in the coronial hearing. There's been a number of occasions where he's been granted a certificate which basically allows him to answer the questions honestly in the inquest, but that evidence won't be able to be used against him in any criminal prosecution. He even applied at one point for the coroner to recuse herself because of allegations of bias by his legal team. So it's sort of gone from this 3-month thing that was supposed to be over fairly quickly and hopefully lead to some meaningful change within the NT police force, and I guess in terms of the shooting itself, some understanding about the factors that had led up to it, to this sort of 2.5, 3-year long kind of odyssey that's got no real sign of ending at this point.
During the last fortnight of hearings, there seemed to be one shocking revelation after another. I was hoping you could start by telling us about the text message exchange between Zachary Rolf and one of his senior colleagues that was raised as evidence.
Yeah, so a couple of weeks ago, the officer who was giving evidence was a sergeant called Lee Bowens, and he was in charge of the immediate response team, the IRT. That was basically this squad of officers who were general duties police, but if there was an incident that required, I guess, people who were trained with more serious weaponry, people who knew a little bit more about what's called clearing a house, so going through a house like you see in the movies to kind of make sure there's no threats there, then they'd call the IRT, and Bowens was the sergeant in charge of that. Now, the inquest heard that Bowens and Rolf had had a text message exchange about this arrest that had gone on, and Bowens had basically used a very offensive phrase, the phrase bush coons, to describe an Aboriginal person who had been pursued and chased down and caught by Rolf. Now, Bowen said he's not sure why he used that term. He said he doesn't sort of resile from the fact he did, but he had no explanation for doing so. It's not something he says frequently or anything like that. But it was a real kind of insight, I guess, into the sort of communications that were going on in the NT police force at the time.
Mm. And there were other text message exchanges involving Rolf that were revealed in previous hearings. What did he have to say about those texts?
Yeah, so Rolf was also asked about the text messages that had been uncovered in which he used, racist terms. And he basically says he completely regrets sending them, that he acknowledged they were racist, he had no excuse. But I guess the thing that sort of underpinned his evidence about those text messages, some of which we've known about since September 2022, was that he said that even though he was not denying he'd been racist in those text messages, and that just because he was calling somebody a racist term in a text, it did not mean that that changed the way he behaved as a police officer. So that was a really fascinating piece of evidence, I felt.
Mm. And so not only did the inquest look at this language, the racist language that was used by some, we also heard some concessions from Rolf about the use of body camera footage. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so Rolf was kind of asked about not turning on his body-worn camera. Rolf was taken to a number of incidents. One of those was this incident he attended where there were basically two men who appeared to be quite intoxicated and were sort of swinging quite wild haymakers at each other at a park in Alice Springs. And Rolf basically goes straight out of the police car, goes up to these two guys and shoves them both on the ground and then kind of demands they stay sitting there. Mm. And what Rolf did in this incident, which was also against the regulations about how he should use body-worn camera footage, is he actually used his phone to take a video of that footage and send it around to other people. And he did that a number of times, and he admitted that was unprofessional and it was a breach of his guidelines. But the court heard, it went to show that he had, I guess, a certain attitude about police rules and procedures that was a little bit lax, but also the way he sort of spoke about that footage in particular. He didn't defend the language, but he sort of said the way he used force towards those two men was appropriate, completely resiled from, I guess, any suggestion that he could have done anything differently when it came to dealing with those two men.
Mm. Can you tell me a little bit about the picture that's been painted over the course of the last fortnight about the wider culture in the NT police?
Effectively, what Rolf did very early on was talk about how he believed racist language is normalised in the force. He gave some very specific examples about an award that was given out in the tactical response group, which is kind of, he described it as the tip of the spear in the NT police force, basically the unit that responds to the very worst and most serious incidents across the territory. And Rolf told the court that the tactical response group had a particular award that he said the group gave out to the person who, in their view, had acted most like an Aboriginal person in the previous year.
Wow.
And he told the court he'd heard that award was called the Coon of the Year Award. He added that he'd heard that the person who won this award was given a club and made to wear a toga to sort of represent in some, you know, very crude and racist way that they were Aboriginal.
And another piece of evidence, Nino, that was brought up was about the way that NT police officers spoke about patrons at a local pub. Can you tell us about that?
So aside from this award within the TRG, Rolf also said that basically every day in the muster room at Alice Springs, he heard racist language. He said there was a bar at the Todd Tavern, one of the pubs in Alice Springs, where a particular section of that bar, which was typically only used by Aboriginal people, was called the Animal Bar. And he also said that he became used to hearing terms such as half caste and quarter caste, which were used in a way he said wasn't meant to be racist, that they were kind of using it to describe, I suppose, the colour of people's skin, but that he kind of realised later on were obviously highly racial terms. He basically stepped through what he said were a number of things that occurred either as individual incidents in the NT police force or more, I suppose, regular occurrences, which made him feel that he wasn't necessarily an outlier in how he used racial language to describe Aboriginal people.
Nino, you mentioned that Rolf seemed to be more forthcoming than he's ever been during this inquest process. What was the NT police response to some of those revelations made by Rolf, in particular that award, for example?
So NT police came out pretty strongly straight away and said, yes, we're going to investigate all these allegations that Rolf has made about racism within the force. They then tendered some statements to that coronial inquest that were from senior officers that had been involved in the tactical response group, so current and former officers of that group. And In those statements, the officers basically clarified that, yes, there was an award that was known as the New Gouda or New Garda Award, and that the person who was awarded this New Gouda Award was actually given a club that had been seized when the TRG responded to riots in an Aboriginal community. And there was also information in those statements that the name of the award, which apparently was a made-up word, had been changed in 2022 after the inquest had started because there was concerns it could be misconstrued, quote-unquote, as associated with racial issues, it mentions in the statement. The statements were also really clear in saying that those officers had never known the award to be called what Rolf said it was called, and that they had also no knowledge at all of it being awarded to people specifically because they were perceived to have acted as if they were Aboriginal, like Rolf had said in his evidence. Basically, where we're at the end of all that, you know, Rolf's evidence on the one hand and the statements from the TRG on the other is that there's still a little bit of a gap between those two accounts of this particular award in the TRG, and the NT police are investigating that.
Next, one journalist's offer to Zachary Rolf.
In Norway, a woman's boyfriend forgets who she is overnight. In Detroit, a man is arrested, but he was never at the crime scene. In Spain, disturbing pictures of young girls have appeared, and no one knows who's behind them. Something strange is happening. A collision between people and artificial intelligence. Discover more in The Guardian's new series, Black Box. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes Monday and Thursdays.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Nino, as part of your coverage, you wrote about how Rolf was taking antidepressants at the time of Kumanjai Walker's shooting. Why did that come up in the inquest?
Yeah, so during his evidence, Rolf was asked a series of questions about his state of mind at various times and how he was feeling in the force. And he was specifically asked about being diagnosed with depression not long before he actually travelled to Yendamu, and the fact that he had been prescribed an antidepressant that had some quite serious potential side effects, including harming or killing yourself or others, overexcitement, and losing touch with reality. He emphasised that he hadn't felt any of those potential side effects, but he actually conceded when he was being questioned about these drugs that perhaps if he'd disclosed to his supervisor he was taking that particular antidepressant, he may not have been actually deployed to Yendamu that night. And he also sort of spoke during his evidence about the fact that he had a, quote, short fuse, and at various points was fairly kind of miserable in the lead up to the shooting, but had kind of been, he said, compartmentalizing that in a way that didn't impact his work. And, you know, he's was taken to various text messages and things like that, which sort of showed him speaking with family and friends about how he was feeling burnt out in the job and how he was coping with his work at that time. And so the picture that came across during Rolf's evidence was of a young man who'd only been in the job a couple of years but was pretty keen to leave. And as part of that, we heard that Rolf had actually texted the former soldier, Ben Robert Smith, about the possibility of getting some private security work overseas. And Rolf was basically saying to him, yeah, look, I'm keen to leave the force to find, you know, wild work and dangerous shit, which goes a little bit to his mentality at that time.
Nino, there has been a lot of media coverage of this case over the years. I want to turn now to a revelation that one journalist offered to write favourable articles to help Rolf rehabilitate his image. Take us through that text exchange that was revealed through the inquest.
Yeah, so a journalist at The Australian told Zachary Rolf only 2 days after he shot and killed Kumanjai Walker that she could, quote, write an article in your defence because, quote, I know what you did was totally warranted, the court heard. Journalist Kristen Shorten, who Rolf said was a friend because her partner was a fellow NT police officer, texted Rolf in November 2019 asking if he was okay after the incident and telling him to ignore the leftist reporting the inquest heard. So counsel assisting Peggy Dwyer was asking Rolf about this exchange he had with the journalist Kristen Shorten as part of a series of questions she asked that was basically designed to probe why it appeared Rolf may have given a different version of events to some people than he gave at his trial about what happened the night Kumanjai Walker was shot dead. So counsel assisting put to Rolf that, hey, you made this up. You lied about this on the stand to make yourself seem more sympathetic to a jury. Rolf denied that and basically said, look, you guys need to get some expert evidence about how memory works in traumatic events. This was something that I recalled after I did all those interviews and after I described what had happened that night to various people. And that's why I didn't bring it up then, because I only actually recalled it later. So between when I'd given those accounts and when I was on the stand in my own trial. So he firmly denied any suggestion at all that he was lying about this happening.
Right. So Nino, what do you make of the inquest so far? You've sat through hours and hours of proceedings. Are there still in your mind any unanswered questions?
The overwhelming sense that I have is that there's so much still that's unresolved here. There's such a wide range of things that the coroner's looking at that may have contributed to Kumanjai Walker's death. And among those are the possibility that structural or systemic racism in the NT police force was a factor. And, you know, the fact that some of those issues may have existed since colonisation. And certainly being in the court, and it was a very fractious atmosphere at times, you didn't necessarily feel that despite how long this has gone for, we were any closer to actually getting to the bottom of any of those quite huge problems. One of the other things that's really unresolved here is, what do you make of Zach Rolf? He's a former constable in the NT police force who was on the stand for a week, who gave some of the most compelling evidence we've heard during the weeks of this inquest about racism in the NT police force. But on the other hand, he's saying that he didn't see any NT police officer treating anybody differently because of their race during the 3 years he was in the force. So you're sort of left with this strange kind of juxtaposition of racism. You kind of try and sort of pass that, and you're kind of left with a bit of a question here, which is, you know, is Rolf sort of, I guess, the outlier in the NT police force, or is he the norm?
Throughout this conversation, you and I have talked a lot about Rolf and his evidence. That's, of course, because he was the one in the witness box. We are limited in what we can report from some of the comments that were made outside the courthouse by Kumanjai Walker's family. But what have they said about the latest hearings?
People from Yandamu did speak briefly out the front of court.
Hello everyone, I'm Samara Fernandez-Brown. I'm a very proud Walpri woman and I'm Kumanjai Walker's cousin.
They were hoping that Rolf finished his evidence that week because he is the last witness. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. He's going to come back in May and give evidence again to finish off what will be the last witness in the inquest.
We are extremely exhausted because we were really hoping to finish, but we will be back in May, hopefully to
give more submissions, to hear more evidence, but to give more submissions that we think are going to be useful for our community and to keep.
What the family really want is they really want to make all their communities safer.
As you know, our community, we're not just here for Gumindjeri, we're not just here for ourselves, we're here for all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander families, in particular the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander families that have lost their loved ones to death in custody as well. So
they want there to be, I guess, a set of guidelines or recommendations that are put in place that remove any likelihood of this sort of thing happening again. There was quite specific, I guess, calls right after the trial and right after Zach Rolfe was found not guilty of murder for things like no guns in remote communities. Now, whether that's something that's recommended by the coroner or not, I'm not sure. And always with coronial inquests, it's about what the recommendations are and whether the government actually acts on them. But for now, it's really just another exhausting wait for the family of Kumanjai Walker.
I think that's why we're so stressed, thinking about having to go back and having to re-prepare, because, you know, it's organising buses, it's organising cars, it's organising who's coming, what accommodation we saw, and then what we're feeding people, and, you know, like throughout the week, and how we're getting people even to court back home. Like, it's just such an enormous amount of effort. And we've got people that have come from Adelaide, we've got people that have come from Katherine, so it's so much logistical work, and it's just so much mental and emotional load that we've got to carry and that we've now got to sort of prepare for again.
That was Samara Fernandez-Brown, the cousin of Kumanjai Walker. Earlier, you also heard from Nino Bucci, courts and justice reporter at Guardian Australia. You can find more of his work on theguardian.com, and we've linked to his latest piece about the inquest on the Full Story page. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Karishma Luthria and James Milsom, who also did the sound design and mixing. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. A crisis support line for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners is available on 13 Yarn or 13 92 76. Don't forget to subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also leave a review. I'm Nord Haydar. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.